I roll my eyes, but I don't argue. The truth is, she may have a point. Speaking of the billionaire boyfriend, Jamie continues, who all's coming to the party tomorrow? I'll finally get to meet Evelyn, right? Oh, yeah, I say. And Blaine, of course. And you and me. We're the only ones who know it's me on that wall. So we're keeping it intimate. Jamie interrupts me with a snort, and I curse my choice of words. We're keeping it small, I begin again. Until 8. That's when the regular guests arrive to see all of Blaine's paintings and do the mingling thing. Cool. And Ollie? She says it casually, and I can't tell if she's just making conversation or if there's still something going on between the two of them. I know I should simply ask, but I can't bring myself to do it. He's not coming, I say. Not for the first part, she clarifies. I know you never told him about the painting. She eyes me sideways. Did you? No, I say firmly. I was wondering if he was coming to the rest of it, the showing, or whatever you want to call it. I'm still calling it a cocktail party, I say, as I pull the car into my assigned parking place. And no, he's not coming. I think he and Courtney have plans, I add, referring to Ollie's fiancé. I feel guilty about the lie, but I don't want to tell Jamie that Damien refused to invite Ollie to his home. It bothers me that Damien and one of my best friends don't get along, but I get where Damien's coming from. Though they'd started out sniffing around each other like two alpha dogs, they'd ultimately forged a tentative truce. But that came to an abrupt end when Ollie told me some of Damien's secrets, and breached the attorney-client privilege by doing so. Damien understands that Ollie thought he was protecting me, and that's probably the only reason that Ollie is still a lawyer and still working in this town. Or on this continent, for that matter. But Damien doesn't want him in the house, and I can't say that I blame him. I hope they find a way to get along, because I need both these men in my life. But it's only been about a week since all the shit went down, and things are just too raw between them. Jamie, however, knows none of that, and I don't plan to tell her. But that's one more wedge between us, even if I'm the only one who realizes it's there. Soon we're at the door, and I'm fumbling for my house key. I slide it into the lock and push open the door, then stop dead on the threshold. Holy fuck, Jamie says, looking over my shoulder. I don't say anything. Jamie has pretty much said it all. There, in the middle of our living room, is the bed. The bed. The beautiful iron bed beside which I'd posed. The stunning bed upon which Damien so thoroughly fucked me last night and so many nights before that. I realize we're both standing frozen and take a step into the room. There's a dress bag from Fred's on the bed with a note pinned to the plastic. I only have to glance at the handwriting on the envelope to feel my body tighten with anticipation. Slowly, I pull the folded slip of paper from the envelope, then unfold it and read.
I would appreciate it if you would do me the honor of wearing this dress tomorrow, Ms. Fairchild. And then, perhaps, you will do me the even greater honor of taking it off.
I realize too late that Jamie is behind me, reading over my shoulder. How did you get so lucky? The guy is seriously swoon-worthy. Totally, I agree, smiling. She flops down on the bed while I unzip the garment bag and then laugh. I'd fallen in love with the dress while we were shopping yesterday. It hits mid-thigh and is made out of dusty blue chiffon. It's not fitted, but the pleated front and flowy design make it fun and flirty, and I cannot wait to put it on with my favorite pair of clunky silver sandals and a matching silver bangle. I hold it up for Jamie to see. What do you think? I think you're going to look hotter than sin in that dress, she says, Can I raid your closet? I'm bored out of my mind with my clothes. Jamie, you're a size 4. I haven't been that small since I escaped from Mother and learned about the existence of that mysterious substance I like to call food. She sighs and eyes my new dress lustfully. I need my own billionaire boyfriend. I don't disagree, I say. I find him a highly desirable accessory. Want to go shopping? Jamie asks. I'm serious about my wardrobe crisis. I glance at my phone. Still no word from Damien. Sure, I say, but give me a sec to change and feed the cat. And can we get some real dinner while we're out? Vodka isn't one of the major food groups. It's not? Jamie retorts, displaying her stellar acting skills by putting real bafflement into her tone. She heads to her room as I go to the kitchen. Lady Meow Meow appears the minute I pop the pool top on her kitty food, and she headbutts the back of my leg until I finally put the food dish down in front of her. I'm in my room, stripping off my work clothes, when Jamie calls to me. How'd he get in the apartment? Beats me, I say. Though I can guess. He probably bribed the manager, who's just wacky enough to have been amused by the thought of a surprise bed delivery. I change into one of the math t-shirts Jamie maligned earlier. Friends don't let friends derive drunk. And a pair of jeans. It's the first time I've worn jeans since Blaine started the portrait, actually, and I hesitate before zipping them up, feeling a bit naughty, like I'm breaking a rule. I'm not, of course. The game's over. If I want to wear jeans, I can. And if I want to go pantyless under a skirt, well, I can do that, too. I'm grinning as I leave my bedroom, but my mood shifts when I get back to the living room and the giant bed that overwhelms the space. I'd been so happy when I walked in and saw it there, as if I were being bathed in a flood of special memories. Now that happiness is mixed with a tinge of some unpleasant emotion, though I'm not entirely sure what is troubling me. I move to the bed and press my palm against the smooth round ball of the footboard. I'm thrilled that the bed wasn't shipped off to a warehouse somewhere or sold to an antique store, but at the same time, I'm undeniably melancholy. It doesn't belong here, I say, when Jamie returns and asks me what's wrong. The bed? It's supposed to be at the Malibu house. Not here, I repeat. It feels like an ending somehow. I remember the story Damien told me, about how he sacrificed a deal he was passionate about in order to save the tiny gourmet food producer. I didn't like the story then, and I like it even less now. Jamie is silent for a moment as she stares intently at me. Oh, shit, Nick, she finally says. Don't even. What? Don't go all psych 101 on me. You're looking for all sorts of meanings that aren't there. You do this all the time. I do not. Well, maybe not all the time, but you did it with Milo. That was freshman year of high school. So maybe all the time was a tiny exaggeration, she concedes. My point is that you had a crush on him and he was a senior, remember? I nod because I remember it well. And it was cold one day, and he lent you his letter jacket. And we spent a week trying to analyze what his underlying motivation was. Oh, yes, I remember. Turns out he was motivated by the fact that you were cold and he was nice. And your point? Do you like the bed? She asks. I love it, I admit. Does Damien know you love it? Sure. So there you go. You like the bed. Damien likes you. Understatement of the year, but there you have it. I'm sure that when you move in, you can take the bed back there with you. When I move in? The idea is both terrifying and exciting. That's what you want, right? Not that I'm trying to kick you out, but a girl's gotta face reality. Yes, I almost say, but then I close my mouth and start over. It's too soon to even think about that. Shit, Nick, you want it. Own it. Fine, I say. I want it. But leaping into things that we want isn't always the best course of action. Sometimes a little thought and discretion make a lot of sense. This isn't about me, she says, totally catching on to the way I've shifted the subject. I sigh. Maybe it should be. You're not exactly one to be giving relationship advice. True, but you asked. So which one of us is the idiot here? Besides, she continues as I stifle a grin, maybe I'm turning over a new leaf. Monogamy can be fun. I mean, I can't imagine getting tired of rain. Her face turns dreamy. Actually, after last night, I don't think I can imagine rain getting tired. I laugh, but have to silently admit that I know the feeling. So I keep the bed? Hell yes, you keep the bed. For that matter, keep it in the living room for a day or so. Margarita sleepover tonight after shopping? With movies? Nothing sappy, she says. I'm not in the mood to cry. Action. I want to see shit being blown up. And right then, that sounds like a pretty damn perfect evening to me. Chapter 9. After stuffing our faces at Haru's Sushi and Roll Cafe and emptying our wallets at the Beverly Center, Jamie and I settle in with a blender full of tequila, frozen limeade, and just a splash of Cointreau. We already had sake with dinner, and were both tipsy enough to sing along with the Christmas-themed rap song at the beginning of Die Hard. We're right at the point when Bruce Willis is making fists with his toes in the bathroom when Jamie's phone rings. She glances at it, then squeals and jumps off the bed before running to her room for privacy. Brian Rain, I presume. I debate continuing with the movie. For all I know, she's going to stay on the phone with him all night, when my own phone rings. I don't bother looking at the screen. I just tap the button on my headset and answer the call. Damien?
Are you okay?
It takes me a minute to realize what he's talking about. The paparazzi. How is it you know every little thing that happens to me? Did you task a satellite? Are there tiny transmitters hidden in the clothes you've bought me?
Every person in the world with a smartphone and a social media account saw pictures of you today, he says. And frankly, I like the satellite idea. I'll get my aerospace division to look into that.
Great.
I asked you a question, Nikki. Are you okay?
I want to snap at him for not giving me credit for taking care of myself. But the worry in his voice is genuine. So I say simply, yes, I'm fine.
They mentioned Ashley.
His voice is as gentle as I ever heard it. And it is that tone as much as the mention of my sister that brings tears to my eyes. I know what you're thinking, but it wouldn't have mattered, I say. No one was around the building when I arrived. They came later. Even if Edward had driven me, he would have been long gone by then.
We'll talk about it later, he says.
And though I know I should argue, I'm happy to shove the topic off into some future Neverland.
Tell me about the rest of your day, he says.
Do I have to?
Not good.
I consider the question. Not bad. But I spent most of the day with this guy on my team named Tanner, who turned out to be a backbiting little prick. Jamie thinks he's the one who called the paparazzi.
And made a few suggestions about corporate espionage?
I'm surprised to hear amusement in Damien's voice.
I must say, you're a most lovely spy.
You're not pissed?
I'm livid, he says. I don't take those kinds of accusations lightly. If your little prick initiated them, I'll find out.
Oh, You sounded like you thought it was funny.
The situation, no. I'm merely anticipating the joy of decimating whoever started a rumor like that. I will stand for a lot of things, but corporate espionage isn't one of them. And suggesting that my girlfriend is my spy makes it that much worse.
I swallow. I tease Damien about the extent of his empire all the time, but sometimes I forget just how wide a net he casts and just how much power he really has. He will find out who started that rumor, be it Tanner or someone else, and I do not doubt that he'll destroy them. Like Ollie has said, Damien is dangerous. To his enemies, at least.
This is not my first choice for a topic of conversation, he says.
Nor mine, I say, relieved. Tell me about your day.
I'd rather hear what you're doing right now. Where are you?
On our bed, I say, thinking of you.
Are you really? I can picture you, he says, lying back, hair on the pillow, your naked body stretched out on top of the duvet.
I can't help but laugh. As much as I love the fantasy, jeans and a ratty t-shirt are closer to the truth. Jamie's in the other room. Which reminds me, where are you? You're not still in Palm Springs, are you?
The day was interminable. I'm in the limo now, getting close to L.A. I'm going to send a driver to pick you up. I want you home when I get there.
The heat from his voice is enough to melt me, and I make a little sighing noise as I lie back with my eyes closed and let the whiskey-smooth words wash over me.
I want you in bed, he continues. I want you naked.
My smile is lopsided and a little drunk. But the bed's here, I remind him. I roll over and stretch my arm out across it, pretending that I'm reaching for Damien.
The apartment, he says. The security desk will give you the codes to get inside. Naked, Nikki. Leave your clothes in a pile by the door so I can see them when I get home. I want to know you're inside, and that you're wet, and that you're waiting for me.
My lips are parted, and my breathing is shallow. Little shivers of electricity race across my skin, and I close my eyes, lost to the power of his words.
There's wine in the fridge. Pour yourself a glass and sip it. Take it to the living room. You'll be thinking of me, Nikki, alone in my house. Alone in all those places I've fucked you. You'll lie down on the couch with your wine beside you, one hand on the glass, one hand on your breast. Maybe a dab of wine on your fingertips as your hand drifts lazily over your body. You'll be thinking of me, won't you, baby?
Yes. I can barely speak.
Your breasts, your nipples, the insides of your thighs. I want you wet for me, baby. A little drunk and a whole lot wet.
Damien. I barely breathe his name. His words have gone to my head like the wine he wants me to drink. Like the margaritas I already have drunk. My teeth graze over my lower lip. And I realize that I'm making small, gyrating movements with my hips. The pressure of the seam of my jeans against my throbbing sex, taking me so very, very close.
Do you understand?
He asks.
And when you get my text that I'm pulling into the garage, I want you to go in the bedroom and lie face down on the bed. Then spread your legs. I'll be there soon. And when I step into the bedroom, the first thing I want to see is you wide open and wet for me. I've missed you today, Nikki,
he adds, his voice a low, demanding growl.
I need to touch you. I want my hand on your cunt when you come, and I want to hold you tight as you tremble in my arms. Mostly, I want to hear you scream my name.
I can't help myself. I moan aloud. What? Jamie calls from her bedroom. Her voice fills the apartment and completely erases the sensual haze to which I have succumbed. I sit up, my head throbbing with both the motion and the realization that I was very close to getting off with my best friend in the next room. Nothing, I shout to her. I'm just talking to Damien. Sorry, what? She says, poking her head out of the door. I'm off the phone. Ready to start the movie again? I hesitate, drawing in a deep breath. I'm still limp and tingly, simply from Damien's words, and I want nothing more than his touch. But I've seen so little of Jamie lately, and now we're in the middle of a girl's night, and I draw in a breath. Hang on, I tell Jamie. I'm on the phone. Oh, sorry. She disappears into the kitchen. You still there? I say into the phone.
Always.
Listen, what you just said, it sounds wonderful.
I'm very glad you think so.
But I can't. Not tonight. There is silence. Damien? You there?
I'm here.
I can tell nothing from his tone. It's just that Jamie and I are doing a girls' night, and...
It's okay, he says,
and this time I hear the emotion in his voice. There is regret, yes, but I think there is also understanding.
I'm disappointed.
Me too, I say. You going to survive without me? I add, trying to add some lightness.
It will be hard, he says, but it's probably for the best.
Thanks a lot, I say, and laugh.
I have a stack of reports I need to get through this weekend. If I can get through them tonight, then Saturday and Sunday are yours.
In that case, I have no guilt whatsoever. Go forth and review, buy, trade, or barter, whatever it is you do to keep the Damien Stark universe from collapsing.
I'll get right on that, he says evenly. And I'll see you tomorrow. You can tell me all about your first day then.
Okay.
Until then, he whispers. Think of me touching you.
I always do, I say, before we end the call. I'm grinning as I toss my phone down beside me on the bed. And when I turn and see Jamie come back from the kitchen with a bag of chips and a bowl of salsa, I can't help but smile even wider. How can you even think about eating more? I'm stuffed.
Like anyone could be too full for chips?
She crawls back onto the bed and nods at the phone. Did he want you to come over tonight? He wanted me at the apartment when he got home from the desert, I say. And yeah, I'm still smiling. I may not be going, but the thought is still nice. Seriously? Jamie leans over and feels my forehead. I shrug away. What are you doing? Checking for fever. Are you ill? I thought that all Damien had to do was crook his finger and you'd come. I told him we were hanging out tonight, I say. And then, because I just can't resist, I add, and for the record, you're right. He crooks his finger and I most definitely come. Jamie rocks with laughter. And after another slug of margarita, I join in. We settle back against the pillows and watch as Alan Rickman joins the party. Soon, Bruce is kicking butt and taking names, and we're glued to the screen. Since this is Jamie's favorite classic action flick, I've seen it at least a dozen times, but I still jump when Rickman kills the boss. Naturally, that's when my phone rings again. It's Ollie. Hey! I say, what's up? Are you with Stark? It's an innocent enough question, I suppose, but I stiffen anyway. No. Why? He sighs, and I realize he heard the terseness in my voice.
I just didn't want to interrupt, Swear to God.
Sorry. No, I'm at home.
Yeah? That's cool. So, would you be up for getting a drink?
Now? The truth is, there was a time when I wouldn't have hesitated. So what that I'm supposed to be in the middle of a girls' night in? Ollie could totally come over and join the movie marathon, or we could all go out and get plastered. But things have shifted so much between us that instead of being psyched to hang with him, I'm wary, and that saddens me. Lately, every time I see Ollie, bits of my life come crashing down around my ears, and I do not want another piece to get chipped away if I can help it. Still, this is Ollie talking, and I'm not ready to give up on us. Do you want to just hang? I ask. Or is there something you want to talk about? He's silent for a moment, and I know he's also aware of the storm clouds between us. We know each other too well.
Both, he finally admits.
Oh, hell, Nikki. This is bullshit, and you know it too. I do know it, but I'm not inclined to admit it. What is? I say.
Charles mentioned the party at Stark's tomorrow,
he says, referring to Charles Maynard, his boss, and the attorney who's represented Damien for over a decade.
He just assumed I was invited too, what with me and you being me and you.
He's trying to be matter of fact, but I hear the hurt in his voice. Ollie. Beside me, Jamie shifts her attention from her iPhone to me. Apparently, this one-sided conversation is more interesting than clearing out her junk email.
I think this is the first time you've thrown a party that I wasn't invited to, Ollie says.
I'm not the one throwing it, I say, but the words are hollow despite their truth. If I'd asked, Damien would have let Ollie come to the party. If it was important to me, I am certain that he would have pushed his disdain aside. But I hadn't asked, because I understood why Damien didn't want Ollie there. I'd chosen the man in my bed over my lifelong friend, and I do not regret the decision. He sighs.
It's just... Look, I'm sorry, okay? I get that you're with the guy, and yeah, I have my issues with him, but if this means that we can't be friends anymore...
He trails off, and I squeeze my eyes closed tight. I don't want to screw up our friendship either, I finally say, and then I let the thought hang. As far as I'm concerned, Ollie's the one who's built the wall. He can damn well be the one who starts tearing it down.
So how about it? He asks. Let's go get a drink. Hang out. Make up dialogue for the people at the next table.
I smile despite myself. When I was in college and Ollie was in law school, that was our favorite form of cheap amusement. We'd go to Magnolia Cafe or Zitejas in Austin and watch people at the other tables. How they moved, how they interacted. And then we'd write their dialogue, turning friends into lovers, crafting arguments, and professing profound love. We never sat close enough to find out what the people were really saying. This was all about the make-believe. Tonight's kind of hard, I say, glancing at Jamie. But hold on a second. I hit the mute button on the phone and look at Jamie. What do you think? Want to make tonight a threesome? I'm not really into that kind of kink. I roll my eyes. Seriously, Ollie wants to go out for drinks.
With both of us?
I can hear the disbelief in her voice. He only invited me, but if you two can't play nice together, then you shouldn't have jumped into bed in the first place. Seriously, James, you need to get past this. She tosses her hands up in surrender. Hey, fair enough. But I'm not the only one being weird. You haven't been in the pro-Ollie camp lately either. So maybe we all three need to have an intervention. Go out. Have fun. Pretend like things are back the way they used to be. I think she hesitates, but it may only be my imagination. So Courtney's not coming? She asks, referring to Ollie's fiancé. He didn't say. I'm guessing not. She's probably traveling this week. So what do you think?
Yeah, sure, she says. But not drinks.
Jamie, If you don't want... No, no, she interrupts. I do. And tonight's fine. I just mean that you and I already have plans later anyway. Ollie can tag along. What plans? This is totally news to me. Rain invited us to a party at the rooftop, and Gareth Todd is going to be there. Who's Gareth Todd? I ask. He, my clueless friend, is the hottest thing in Hollywood right now, and we're going to meet him. Alan Rickman or Sean Connery, I'd be excited. Gareth Todd, not so much. Well, you're going anyway. This is our night to have fun, remember? I glance at the television. I was totally looking forward to the airplane version of Die Hard next, but I have to admit it does sound like fun. I've never been to a Hollywood party, and just because I haven't got a clue who the latest stars are doesn't mean that the glitz and glam won't be a hoot. Then again, stars mean paparazzi, and that sounds decidedly less fun. Won't the press be there? I'm really not in the mood to deal with them. Nah, Rain explained how it works. They'll be hanging around the entrance, probably, but since they don't expect you, just wear a hat and keep your head down. Ollie and I can flank you, it's totally no big. And once we're at the party, the only photographers are part of Gareth's PR corps. So it'll be a vulture-free night, swear to God. My phone rings, and I realize it's Ollie, who apparently decided he'd been on hold for long enough and hung up. Sorry, I say, then explain the whole Gareth Todd Hollywood party thing. Unlike me, he doesn't live in a cultural bubble, and he knows exactly who Gareth is. And he's keen to do the party thing. As it turns out, I'm right about Courtney, but wrong about the reason. I'd assumed she was away on business, but Ollie tells me that she's flown to San Francisco to look at wedding dresses with her mother. He says he'll be over in less than an hour, and we'll all go together. And even though I'm a little nervous about the three of us hanging together for the first time since Jamie and Ollie screwed around, I'm also looking forward to it. These two are my best friends, after all. And yeah, I miss them. I pick up my phone to call Damien and tell him I've had a change of plans. If he's not deep into work stuff already, maybe he can even join us. But my finger hesitates over his name. Damien doesn't want to spend time with Ollie. For that matter, while he was fine with me hanging with Jamie, I have a feeling he'd be less than thrilled if Ollie had been part of that mix. And besides, nothing of what I told him has changed. I am still with Jamie. We've just added another person, too. I drop my phone back onto the bed, then get up and head to my room to find an outfit for tonight. The glow I was feeling earlier, however, has faded a bit, and that frustrates me. I'm not doing anything wrong, so why do I feel so guilty? A woman wearing nothing but a bikini and down-covered wings brushes by me, carrying a tray of rainbow-colored champagne. As far as I can tell, the champagne has been dyed to match the pool, which is changing color every 30 seconds as the lights rotate through the spectrum. If I had been held at gunpoint and forced to come up with the most ostentatious Hollywood party imaginable, I do not think I could have conjured anything even close to what now surrounds me. The waiters and waitresses wear tiny gold bathing suits that leave nothing to the imagination, and decorative wings that make it difficult to maneuver through the crowd. We are on the roof of one of downtown Los Angeles's tallest buildings, and I can only presume the unstated message is that we, the guests, hold such a prominent spot in heaven that the angels themselves must serve us. Jamie bounces up to me and presses a glass of bright red champagne into my hand. She's wearing an extremely short red skirt, paired with a black lace blouse over a red bra. As always, she looks amazing. I'm wearing a black sarong skirt and matching black tank, the only color provided by a pink scarf that I have draped around my neck. Considering the outfits that I see walking past us, on the whole, Jamie is dressed at least as conservatively as I am. Amazing, isn't it? She asks. It's exactly what I would expect a Hollywood party to be, I say dryly. Beside me, Ollie barks out a laugh, and Jamie scowls at us both. Don't be cynical, she says. From what Rain tells me, this is one of the parties of the summer, and it's incredibly exclusive. She gestures vaguely in the direction she came from. Steve said he's been finagling to get an invite for months. Steve's here? I rise up on my toes and search the crowd. What about Anderson? Steve is the first person Jamie met after she skipped out on me during our college years and moved to Los Angeles to find fame, fortune, and near starvation as an actress. I met him during my many pre-graduation visits, but I haven't seen him since I actually moved here. He's here too. I told them we're by the pods, Jamie says, referring to the odd red waterbed pods near where we're standing. They're making the circuit. This doesn't surprise me. Steve is a working screenwriter, despite the fact that he's never seen one of his movies produced. According to Jamie, this is not an unusual thing in Hollywood. His husband, Anderson, sells real estate. I adore Steve, but unless he takes pity on me and talks classic movies, my eyes glaze over 10 minutes into the conversation. But I can always find something interesting to say about houses.
This really is ostentatious as hell, Ollie says. But it's also pretty damn cool. I mean, look at this place.
I have to agree that the venue is amazing. It's a clear night, and we seem to be floating among the skyscrapers. I can see the mountains in the distance, looming black, dotted with pinpoints of light against a pencil-gray sky. From a booth on the other side of the roof, a DJ is providing danceable music, and many of the guests are taking advantage of the huge dance floor. Drinks are provided by the roaming angels, but can also be had at the poolside bar. And lest we forget this is a Hollywood party, a series of clips from various films, presumably starring Gareth Todd, are being projected onto a 2-story tall screen. Okay, I say. Y'all win. It's pretty cool. I take a long drink and finish off my champagne, because I am here tonight to have fun with my friends. So, where is your guy? I ask, which prompts Jamie to crane her neck and look around. Unless he fell off the roof, he's here somewhere. Let's wait here for Steve and Anderson, then we can go make the circle and find him.
So are you getting serious about this guy?
Ollie asks her.
I mean, after a guy like me, it's hard to imagine you could want anyone else.
He is clearly teasing, but underneath, I think I hear a hint of wounded pride. I hope that I'm imagining it, for his sake, for Jamie's sake, and mostly for Courtney's. Yeah, Jamie says, a slow smile blooming. Emphasis on the getting. We're not there yet, but, well, yeah.
Good,
Ollie says curtly. I frown, trying to think of something pithy and cutting to say, but nothing comes to mind. Now, if you want to talk serious, Jamie trails off, her eyes on me, her eyebrows waggling mischievously. I smile innocently. A lady never tells.
It's too damn soon, Ollie says shortly. And
he cuts himself off. What? I snap.
The whole thing just worries me. Stark worries me.
Jesus H. Christ, Jamie blurts out. Don't you ever give it a rest? I'm grateful for Jamie's interference. I'd thought that the Ollie-Damien war would be off the table tonight after my talk with Ollie earlier, but apparently 2 glasses of green champagne have loosened his tongue.
That's why I love her, Ollie says, hooking an arm around Jamie. She tells it like it is, and doesn't take my shit.
And what? I ask. Courtney doesn't tell you when you're being a prick? It is bad form for me to play the Courtney card right now, and I know it. But I'm pissed. Besides, I'm supposed to be Ollie's best man at his upcoming wedding, and although I've never actually been a best man before, I'm pretty sure that one of the jobs is smacking down the groom when he crosses the line into being an asshole.
No, Ollie says seriously. She doesn't.
He bends down and sits on the edge of the water-filled mattress inside the pod. His body shifts and rolls, and he reaches out and grabs the red molded plastic that forms part of the pod's arching roof. She just waits until all the shit is built up, and then she breaks up with me. I sit down next to him, ignoring the way our seat sloshes beneath us. I thought you weren't going to let any more shit build up. Ollie and Courtney have been on again, off again for years. This is the first time they've made it all the way to an official engagement. I really like Courtney, and I hope it works out. But the more time that goes by, the more I'm afraid that Ollie is going to fuck it up yet again. Or, to be more accurate, that he already has fucked it up.
I'm like Pigpen, Ollie says. Shit just follows me around. Not all of us lead the charmed life of a certain billionaire we know.
Damn it, Ollie!
He holds his hands up in surrender.
Sorry, I'm a total prick.
Yes, I agree, you are. I suck in a breath. Look, I'm sorry you have a problem with Damien, but he's important to me. And if I'm important to you, then you need to figure out a way to deal with that.
That's the point, Ollie says. You are important to me, and I can deal with Stark. I can even ignore all the shit on him I could dig up in just 1 hour in the Bender Twain file room, he adds, referring to the law firm where he works. It's not the man that's the problem. Well, not the big problem. It's what's around him.
What are you talking about?
Come on, Nikki. You practically disguised yourself to come here tonight, he says, referring to the hat that I'd worn, just as Jamie suggested. Do you want that life? Hell, can you handle it?
He adds, then brushes his hand lightly across my thigh before twining his fingers in mine.
I just worry about you is all.
My throat is thick, and I look down, not quite willing to meet his eyes. I know his concern for me is genuine. Ollie has seen my scars, and he has seen me break, too. More important, he's helped put the pieces of me back together. Damien's worried about the same thing, I admit quietly. But I can stand it, I add, looking up so that I can see his eyes. I am standing it, and I want to, because Damien is worth it. His shoulders droop.
Who would have thought I'd have something in common with Damien Stark?
I laugh out loud, and Ollie grins.
Seriously, he says. I may have my issues with Stark, but I also know he cares about you.
He does, I say. I'm about to add that I know that Ollie cares for me too, but my words are stalled by the arrival of Steve and Anderson, accompanied by two absolutely gorgeous men.
Thank God, Jamie says. You guys have perfect timing.
Since I am desperate for a change in subject, I agree wholeheartedly and allow myself to be hugged and air-kissed and complimented by Steve and Anderson, while Ollie shakes their hands and otherwise looks grim. I recognize the guy who has swooped Jamie into his arms as Brian Rain, and it doesn't take a huge mental stretch to identify the final member of my rescue party as Gareth Todd. After all, his face has been splashed on the movie screen all evening.
Well, hello, he says, stepping into my personal space. I don't think we've met.
Nikki, I say, my mask firmly back in place. I am no longer in a party mood, and right then, all I want is to run through the social niceties and get the hell out of here.
I hope you're having fun, he says, moving even closer.
I take a step back and find myself bumping against Ollie. He puts a steadying hand on my shoulder, and that simple touch makes me want to cry. That's the way it used to be, Ollie reaching out to steady me whenever I felt I might shatter.
We were going for a celestial theme, Todd says. Get it?
It's very colorful, I say.
It doesn't even come close to sparkling the way you do, he says.
He's only inches from me, and I'm sandwiched between him and Ollie. It occurs to me that if Damien said those words to me, I would probably melt. From Gareth, however, they only irritate.
I hope that Jamie will intervene, but she is lost in her rainstorm and will not be rescuing me anytime soon. I'm on my own, and I know only one surefire way of regaining my personal space.
You have me at a disadvantage, sugar,
I say, with my brightest smile and my thickest Texas drawl.
You know my name, but I don't have even a teensy tiny clue as to yours.
Oh. He takes a step back, presumably allowing his hyperventilating ego to get some air. I'm Gareth Todd.
Very nice to meet you. And what is it you do?
Behind me, Ollie shifts, and I can tell that he's going to explode with laughter. Jamie, thank goodness, isn't paying attention.
I thought we were going to dance, Ollie says, curling his fingers around mine.
Of course, I say, as he tugs me away.
So nice chatting with you, Mr. Todd.
You just dissed a movie star,
Ollie says as he pulls me onto the dance floor.
Oh?
I say innocently, then bat my eyes for effect.
Was he a movie star?
Ollie ignores my silliness.
Jamie is going to kill you.
I know, I say. As far as Jamie is concerned, anyone who can help her climb the ladder must be treated with the utmost deference.
You have to admit he deserved it.
I admit nothing, Ollie says, but he's smiling. So we're here. Are we going to dance?
It's either that or head home. And right then, I'm basking in the détente between Ollie and me.
Sure,
I say. Then follow him onto the floor and let the music take over. It's loud and heavy on the bass, and just what I need to get my mind off everything. Still, I can't help but wish that the song was slow, and it was Damien on the floor with me instead of Ollie. The wish is so fervent, in fact, that my imagination conjures the man. His tall form cutting through the crowd, his mouth a hard line, his face expressionless, his eyes like a storm at sea. It is only when all eyes turn toward him, drawn in by the pull of Damien Stark, that I realize this is the real Damien, striding through the wash of colored lights and heading straight toward Ollie and me.
Chapter 10.
Go,
Damien says to Ollie, his voice colder and more commanding than I have ever heard it. I see my friend open his mouth as if to argue, but I catch his eye and nod. He frowns, then shoots Damien a look so full of disdain it makes my stomach curl. Damien doesn't notice. He's paid Ollie only scant attention, and his eyes have never left my face.
Damien, I begin.
No,
he says. He pulls me roughly to him and wraps his arms around me. He practically trembles with anger, and I press my cheek against his chest, thankful to have this brief reprieve before the storm hits. The music is still loud and fast, with such a heavy bass that the roof beneath our feet seems to throb. I imagine we must look ridiculous, holding each other as if in a slow dance, but I don't care. And soon, to my surprise, the music changes to match our pose. I glance up, curious, and see that a small crowd has gathered around us. Damien Stark is at least as famous as Gareth Todd, and we have stolen Mr. Todd's spotlight. I can only presume that the DJ is among the spectators and has decided to match the music to our mood. Since we do nothing more than sway in each other's arms, interest soon wanes. The crowd either drifts away or joins us on the floor, and I begin to feel less like a fish in a bowl, a chastised fish, ready to be scolded. He holds me through one song and then another, and though I am happy to spend my entire life inside the circle of his arms, I have reached the point where I can no longer stand the suspense. Say something, I plead. He stays silent, and a cold dread curls through me. I am about to beg again when he speaks, so low and so gentle that I have to strain to hear him, and even then I am not sure that I have actually caught his words.
I'm sorry.
You're what? I step back so that I can see his face, because I am certain that I have not heard right.
I'm sorry, he repeats.
We have stopped swaying, and now we stand still on the dance floor. Is this some sort of reverse psychology? Because I know you pretty well, Damien Stark, and that wasn't repentance I saw in your eyes when you crashed through the crowd. More like scary megalomaniac fury. Besides, I add with a small grimace, I'm the one who's sorry. Damien's expression doesn't change, but for the tiniest of instants, I think I see a flicker of amusement.
First off, he says, I didn't crash through the crowd. I walked, and quite calmly, too, considering the circumstances.
I swallow. I knew he was pissed.
Second, he continues, I believe a megalomaniac is someone who suffers from delusions about their own power. Trust me, he says.
And this time I am certain I see mirth dancing in his eyes.
I suffer no delusions about the extent of my power. And finally, you may have reason to be sorry. I, however, have more.
I have no idea what to say. This conversation isn't going at all the way I expected. But he's right. I do have reason to be sorry. I should have told you that Jamie and I were going out with Ollie.
So you knew at the time?
No. Rain called later and told Jamie about the party. Then Ollie called and ended up coming along. I actually picked up the phone to call you, but then I didn't. I finish with a shrug.
Because you knew I'd be pissed.
I nod. And that's why I'm sorry.
Then we have that in common.
I watch his face silently, waiting for him to explain.
I don't want to be the asshole who keeps you away from your friends, he says. And I don't want you to feel like you have to keep things from me in order to see them. And I'm sorry because you obviously felt exactly that way.
Polite Nikki starts to protest, but what he's saying is the truth. Slowly, I nod.
I won't keep you from your friends, Nikki. But damn it, I don't like the son of a bitch.
This is not exactly breaking news, but I still take a moment to consider how to respond. I get that, I say. He hasn't exactly earned your trust, but I've known him forever, and he's one of my closest friends.
He's seen you naked, Nikki. He's touched your scars.
I blink at him. Surely he's not. Are you jealous? The possibility shocks me. I've already told Damien that Ollie and I never slept together. It was never like that between us.
Hell yes, I'm jealous. I'm jealous of anyone who comforts you, who pulls you into his arms and makes the hurt go away.
I didn't even know you back then, I whisper.
And I'm jealous of the time that he's had with you that I haven't.
You're not being fair.
I'm not being fair at all, but that doesn't change the facts. You're not just friends. You haven't been for a long time. At least not since he got you through the hell with that asshole Kurt.
I close my eyes, remembering the boy who'd hurt me so badly years ago that I'd needed Ollie to help me pick up the pieces.
Ollie's in love with you, Nikki. It's the one thing I do respect him for.
Damien continues.
He has excellent taste in women.
These are not things that I want to hear. Ollie has only ever been my friend, albeit an extremely close one, at least until recently. I don't like the way things are changing, and I don't want to hear what Damien is saying. Mostly, I don't want to suddenly realize that I've been foolishly, stupidly blind. I think of Courtney and feel a little sick. He's engaged, Damien. I say, but the words are weak, and I cannot help but see Jamie in my mind. Fidelity is not one of Ollie's strong suits.
I know he is,
Damien says.
And maybe he loves his fiancée, I don't know. But I do know that he loves you. And one of these days, that's going to cause a very big problem between him and me.
I manage a weak smile. Don't go all Wild West on me. Though with all your money, I guess it would be more Stark Manor than OK Corral, and a duel instead of a gunfight. But be careful, Damien. Ollie grew up in Texas. He's a good shot.
I'm a better one,
Damien says, and there's none of my light teasing in his voice. I really am glad you're here.
As am I. It's good to hold you. This entire day has been challenging.
I wince, thinking of the paparazzi that accosted me outside of the office and those bullshit allegations of corporate espionage. Sorry. He gently strokes my cheek.
No,
he says.
Not you. But there are things.
He sighs, and I am surprised at the exasperation I hear.
Tapestries that I've woven carefully over the years are starting to unravel. I don't like it when things don't go as I plan or expect.
He aims a small smile at me.
You may not have noticed it about me, but I am most comfortable when I am in control.
I'm shocked, Mr. Stark. Truly shocked. He ignores my sarcasm, and when he speaks, his voice is low and even.
Actually, I suppose you do fall within those parameters. I wanted you at home. You said no. I didn't like it.
I step close to him and slide my hands around his waist. I suppose if it bothers you that much, you can simply tie me up and keep me permanently at your side. I can feel the way his body stiffens against mine, and I am glad I'm holding on to him. My own knees are weak. How simple it is to slip into passion with Damien. Even when we quarrel, we're never far away from the fire, and it's so easy to get pulled into the conflagration. And always, always, there is the need to touch him, to feel him, to know that he is real and that he is mine.
Why, Ms. Fairchild,
he says,
I believe you're thinking naughty thoughts.
Very, I confirm.
I may have to take you up on your suggestion, he says.
He tugs on the end of my pink scarf. I feel the smooth brush of the material as it slides over my skin.
Tie you up,
he says, twisting the end of the scarf around one wrist.
Keep you close.
He gives the scarf a tight, quick jerk, and I stumble toward him. He catches me so that I don't fall, and bends down so that his lips are close to my ear.
But first, I think you need to be very thoroughly spanked.
I tilt my head so that he can see my eyes. I'd rather be thoroughly fucked. He groans, and I know that I have won this round.
Oh God, Nikki, what you do to me.
No, I say, my entire body on fire. What you do to me. And please, Damien, do it soon.
We're leaving,
he says, and I can only nod mutely. Where are we going? I ask as we take the elevator down. There are two other couples in the car with us, and only the tips of our fingers are touching. It is so intimate, though, that I feel like I'm naked before them.
The apartment, he says curtly.
Thank God. If he wanted to go all the way back to the Malibu house, I was going to lose my mind. Even so, I'm not sure I can make it the few short blocks. But then the elevator doors glide open, and as soon as our companions step off in front of us, we are accosted by the flash of cameras, the press of microphones, and the overlapping queries of a dozen demanding voices. Now I clutch Damien's hand and move closer to his side.
Mr. Stark! Damien!
Nikki, over here!
What can you say about your refusal to speak at the dedication of the Richter Tennis Center?
Can you explain your decision, Mr. Stark?
I hold tight to Damien and keep my head down as we press forward toward the street. I assume at first that these are simply the same reporters and paparazzi that had been hovering about when we'd arrived. But then I see that in addition to the TMZ and E! Reporters, there are vans from CNN and even the Wall Street Journal. Apparently, someone noticed Damien's arrival, and the word spread like wildfire. I squeeze Damien's hand tighter, hoping he has a car nearby. It may only be a block to the apartment, but I do not want to walk it with these vultures following in our wake.
What about the rumors out of Germany, Mr. Stark?
A voice calls, and Damien's hand tightens around mine as he leads us firmly and silently toward the valet stand.
Nikki, is Damien Stark off the bachelor block?
Damien, how will the talk of a possible German indictment affect your holdings in the European Union?
My mind is spinning. An indictment? I force myself not to look at Damien, and instead look forward, my face a mask of disinterest. There is no way, no way in hell, that I am letting these vultures see that I haven't a clue what they're talking about. Is Stark international in some kind of legal snafu? Is that what he meant by the tapestry unwinding?
Nikki! Mr. Stark! Germany! Indictment!
The voices blend together into a hideous cacophony.
Richter!
Dedication!
Damien!
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 Damien must have summoned Edward without me realizing, because the limo pulls to a smooth stop in front of the valet stand, and Edward gets out.
No, Damien says. I've got it.
As Edward gets back in, behind the wheel, Damien tugs me forward, then opens the rear passenger door, his body shielding me from the blinding storm of lights and questions. I'm just about to slide into the car when Damien pulls his hand from mine, then turns and faces the crowd. A hush falls. Considering Damien's staunch policy of not talking to the press, I think the paparazzi are at least as shocked as I am.
I will not be attending the dedication ceremony for the Richter Tennis Center,
Damien says, in the firm, clear voice he uses during business meetings.
While I fully support the construction and operation of such a center, I cannot, in good conscience, support its dedication, honoring a man I don't respect. As for your other questions, neither Ms. Fairchild nor I have any comment.
Immediately, the air fills with mingled voices, each louder than the next, none discernible. They are shouting follow-up questions, shouting for Damien to turn for a picture, shouting for me to step away from the open limo door. Damien ignores them, turning to face me. I realize that I am still standing frozen, slightly bent midway in the motion of entering the limo. And then, another voice rises above the noise, this time from the far side of the street.
Damien Jeremiah Stark!
I glance